Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ann Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, December 17th, 2015. The SPLM-IO advance team is due to arrive in Juba this week.
For the agreement to be successful, it obviously needs the participation of both parties. So we hope that with the return of the IO, the implementation can move forward more quickly and conflict can be stopped entirely. But it's a process. It doesn't just happen in a single day.
And what does devaluing the pound mean for South Sudanese?
If you are a foreigner and you are planning to invest in South Sudan, well, now it should be more profitable to invest in South Sudan because the South Sudanese pound is cheaper compared to the dollar.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan police say they are doing everything they can to ensure residents and their property remain secure during the holiday season. South Sudan's Inspector General of Police has outlined measures the police are carrying out to prevent crime during the festive season. For VOA News, Waki Simon Mudu reports from Juba.
General Pieng Denkwol told the reporters at a news conference in Juba today that he will deploy more police officers in the capital and across the country.
We have mobilized enough manpower, personnel, that will involve all the security organs that are in Juba, and they will be deployed to all the areas according to security arrangements. Emergency call center and the emergency response units will be on standby for 24 hours. And all the public to call whenever you have an emergency.
Qual did not specify how many additional police officers will be deployed in Juba or the rest of the country during the festive season. In recent weeks, some Juba residents say police failed to respond to emergency calls. They say some officers with the emergency response units sometimes demand money when ordered to respond to emergencies. Others charge that some police officers refuse to turn up when informed about an emergency situation such as a robbery in progress. Qual says this year, all officers on duty will be tightly monitored by their commanders.
We have very strict and serious instructions to all the personnel that are going to participate in all these arrangements to have good conduct, and we have code of conduct that will punish any misbehavior or any misconduct.
And Qual says he has directed police commissioners manning security in all 10 states to make all necessary arrangements to protect people and their property, including providing his office with their security plans for the festive season. He says the government has provided 15 additional vehicles to Juba police officers so they can quickly respond to calls over the holidays. A police garage is being set up to repair and maintain any vehicles that break down during the festive season. Qual also warned residents that firing gun in the air as a form of celebration, a common practice among South Sudanese during New Year's celebrations, is against the law and will be treated as a crime.
We want to warn any person, being civilian or organized force personnel, that the random shooting is totally forbidden.
Qual says earlier this year, his officers arrested several people who shot guns into the air while celebrating. He did not specify the number of those arrested or what specific offense they had been charged with. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
USAID is also working to help feed thousands of hungry South Sudanese. The aid agency this week pledged an additional $173 million to combat severe food shortages caused by the fighting that broke out 2 years ago. USAID's Deputy Assistant Administrator Bob Levitt says they expect 20% of the population to face severe life-threatening hunger this month alone. The new assistance will provide more than 85,000 tons of emergency food, including specialized nutrition products that treat acute malnutrition. The aid will serve 2.4 million South Sudanese facing severe life-threatening hunger, as well as refugees within South Sudan. The agency says in a statement that it will partner with the UN World Food Program to stock food ahead of the May to August rainy season, when most roads become impassable, especially in hard-to-reach areas. In the statement, Levitt criticizes the government and the armed opposition for causing a man-made crisis, which he says, quote, continues to put millions in the grip of life-threatening hunger and insecurity, end quote. While the U.S. government and others go to extraordinary measures to save lives, the U.S. remains the single largest provider of humanitarian assistance to South Sudan. The latest contribution brings the total U.S. aid to South Sudan to nearly $1.5 billion since the fighting began in December 2013. The Bank of South Sudan plans to auction off $20 million U.S. dollars on Monday. The auction is open to eligible commercial banks, according to a statement released today. The Bank of South Sudan says eligible banks will have to fill out an application that can be collected from the Bank of South Sudan. The minimum bid for the auction will be $50,000, and banks cannot bid more than 20% of that amount. The Bank of South Sudan has not given a reason for the auction. However, the shortage of dollars in the country has made it difficult for citizens to secure dollars to purchase everyday goods. This move comes 2 days after the Bank of South Sudan announced it will begin to allow the open market to determine the rate of the South Sudanese pound, effectively getting rid of the fixed exchange rate. Amadou C., the director of the Africa Growth Initiative at the Washington-based Brookings Institute, says the auction is designed to level the playing field and avoid one bank from dominating the market. C. also says the overall decision to devalue the South Sudanese pound is one that could benefit many people.
If you are in agriculture and you are exporting your goods, this should help you because the value of your goods should be cheaper. If you are a foreigner and you are planning to invest in South Sudan, well, now it should be more profitable to invest in South Sudan because the South Sudanese pound is cheaper compared to the dollar.
C says devaluing the South Sudanese pound will bring some inflation into the market. He says the price of imported goods is likely to rise. He also says because over 90% of the government's revenue is in foreign exchange, having a cheaper rate should effectively increase the government's revenues in local currency.
So since 2011, you had rationing of foreign exchange. You had a parallel market rate with a big gap with the official rate. And then also you had this rent-seeking activities because the foreign exchange houses were the only one that could buy the dollar at the official rate, which was cheaper, right? And suddenly now you have this big shock from the oil price going down, now lower than $40, which really reduces the supply of dollars coming in the market, reduces the fiscal revenues from the government, and makes the whole situation less and less sustainable.
C says one factor that influenced the decision to devalue the pound is the sharp drop in revenue from oil prices. The drop suffocated the flow of dollars in South Sudan, which made matters even worse for the local currency.
And recently, we've seen the price of oil going below $40, which means that less dollars are coming in the country simply because the government is getting less money from its sales of oil. So just looking at the supply and demand, so if the supply of dollars is decreasing, which means that dollars are scarce, dollars are rare, the price of dollars is going to increase. So which means that the value of your local currency vis-a-vis the dollar is going down.
C says there are a few factors that drove officials to make the decision to move to a floating rate. He says now that there is only one rate, it will close the margin where the privileged few were able to buy goods at a cheaper rate. An advanced team of rebels loyal to Riek Machar are due to arrive in Juba this week. The Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Committee, the body overseeing the implementation of the August peace deal, says having the SPLM and opposition advance team in Juba will facilitate the formation of other institutions. As Philip Thonaleo reports for VOA from Juba, both warring parties have violated the permanent ceasefire and transitional security arrangements many times.
GEMEC acting spokesperson Ali Bejai says GEMEC chairman and former Botswana president Fetos Moghai map out plans to receive 150 SPLM-IO members this week, the first batch of the Durban team in Juba. The arrival was delayed in large part because the two sides could not agree on how many members should be part of the Durban team. The SPLM-IO wanted well over 600. The government said it should be about 30. Bejai says both sides are now ready to move forward.
With the initiation of some of the institutions like the ceasefire and transitional security arrangements monitoring mechanism, the National Constitutional Amendment Committee, and another meeting of the JMEC, the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, which is Tuesday. The others are on different days, and that implementation can proceed.
Bejai says a total of 609 opposition officials will arrive in the country over the next 2 weeks. He says the SPLM-IO delegates will travel throughout South Sudan to demonstrate that the peace is holding.
Because the opposition is due to participate in the institutions in different parts of the country, they will be traveling to the other states as well as to Juba.
SPLM-IO officials have been concerned about the safety of the Durban team. Bejai says the government and the SPLM-IO will together shoulder responsibility of providing security to the team.
For the agreement to be successful, it obviously needs the participation of both parties. So we hope that with the return of the IO, the implementation can move forward more quickly and conflict can be stopped entirely. But it's a process. It doesn't just happen in a single day.
Machar told South Sudan in Focus in an exclusive interview last week that his Durban team will be protected by what he calls a third party. He did not elaborate. JMEC is not giving any specific dates for the arrival of the rebels in Juba. It will be the first time members of the SPLM in opposition set foot in Juba, seeing the power struggle within the ruling SPLM party escalated into violent conflict in late 2013 and spread to other parts of the country. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Teachers are trained not to beat children in WoW. That story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you want to do before you die?
I'd love to make a rememberable event for the whole country, for my country to know, as in to help like a very specific group of people who can remember at any time that I help them once in a while.
I want to have visited every country in Africa: Nigeria, Liberia, Togo, Cote d'Ivoire, Guinea, all of them. I really want to be there.
Okay, I would want to be successful so that I pay back my parents for what they have invested in me, and of course live a good life.
Now, before I die, I want to be a women activist and the voice for the vulnerable, whether through an already established organization or a CBO, or starting up my own organization.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A new report by the Human Rights Watch says Jordan is deporting 800 Sudanese asylum seekers. Sudanese Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says the move taken by Jordan to deport Sudanese citizens is acceptable only if the so-called Sudanese asylum seekers interfere with Jordan's state of affairs. VOA fellow Tito Justin has this story from Washington.
Human Rights Watch said yesterday that police rounded up hundreds of Sudanese, including men, women and children, at a camp erected on November 15 in front of the United Nations High Commission for Refugees office in Jordan's Amman. The Human Rights Watch report said Sudanese refugees were protesting what they viewed as discriminating in provision of humanitarian assistance and resettlement services. Bilal says majority of the asylum seekers a Sudanese refugee in Jordan who come from the Darfur region and fled to escape ongoing conflict there under the care of UN Shearer. He says some of the Sudanese who are currently in Jordan have gone there to seek for treatment and that deporting them is unacceptable.
For any Sudanese outside the country, if he had been brought back by health authorities to Sudan, there is no problem unless he has got a legal, residence there in the country, and in spite of that, have been deported. Otherwise, there is no problem for us.
Joe Stock, Human Rights Watch Deputy Middle East Director, in a report said there is no excuse for Jordan to deport vulnerable asylum seekers back to Sudan, regardless on how they entered the country, referring it as pantsmen. But Sudanese Information Minister accused some of its citizens seeking asylum in Jordan that they traveled from Sudan illegally, aiming to proceed to Europe. Bilal did not elaborate why Sudanese are leaving their country illegally seeking asylum in Jordan or Europe. He says Sudan will welcome its citizens. Jordan or another country is willing to deport in case they violate the right to be in that country.
Some of these would take it as a chance to go to Jordan, and from there they can go to Europe or something like that. Anyway, they are Sudanese. If they are deported back to their country, they are welcome. They will be well treated.
According to UNHCR, about 4,000 Sudanese asylum seekers are in Jordan. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
The U.S. Agency for International Development conducted a week-long training session last week for teachers in South Sudan's western Bahr al-Ghazal state on better ways to teach and discipline young children. USAID, through its Room to Learn project, is training dozens of primary school teachers in the state capital of Wau. Students say when they make mistakes, they want teachers to stop beating them. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Wau.
Musa Taban Nadue is the head teacher of Ngongba Primary School in Wau County. Taban says the deadly conflict in South Sudan has left many people, including children, traumatized. Through this week's training, Taban says he has learned how to deal with children with psychological problems.
We are taught how to treat children who have problems in their families. Many times, just beat children who misbehave or fail to perform well in class without asking the root cause to the problem. Following this training, we are going to use our psychology to deal with some of those issues.
James Lakuna Tana, who heads USAID Rooms to Learn project, says teachers must be alert and try to understand what has happened in these children's family as they teach them and see them grow.
As a teacher in the school, should do try by all possible means to make the school attractive for the child. How do you make the child feel at home when he is in school? How do you detect a child who is with you in the class, whether he has got a problem either within the school or outside the school? How do you ensure that the environment within the school is friendly to all boys and girls?
Natana says cases of trauma are common here, given South Sudan's history of conflict. He says the key is encouraging teachers to help children from troubled backgrounds so they can overcome their problems and perform well in school. Anita Zakaria Unango, who started teaching 3 years ago, says before the recent training, she knew very little about how to make learning interesting to children. Speaking in Arabic, Unango says she is working to improve her English. She says she believes the recent training has made her a better teacher.
I did not know how to pronounce the tones of all letters. For example, sound A, B, C. I did not know that they have sounds different from others, but now I know.
Natana says due to the nearly two-year conflict, it is common to find children with a big age difference in the same class. He says teachers are learning how to create harmony in a classroom with the varying age groups.
You find a child who is 5 years and a child who is 13 years in primary one. So how do we ensure that the child who is in 13 years and in his class one is not bullying the child who is 5 or 6 years who has just come? Okay, how do we ensure that in a mixed school, the boys are not bullying the girls?
Speaking in Arabic, 15-year-old Masmino Mario, a primary 6 pupil at John Paul Catholic School in Wau, says teachers should help students grow not only academically but morally as well, and they should not be allowed to beat children.
Teachers should call us into their offices and ask us politely if we did anything wrong, but they should not beat us. Now, as we are growing up, we need advice so we can change any bad behavior. Otherwise, we will fail in life.
For punishment, some teachers order young students to clean the school compound, or they give them hose to clean tall grass around the school. Others are beaten with a stick. Currently, there are no official laws on the books against teachers beating students in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
Students from the Oromo ethnic group in Ethiopia have been protesting for 3 weeks against an urban expansion plan around the capital that they fear will lead to land grabs without proper compensation. Security forces have clashed with demonstrators, killing at least 5 people this week. Martha Vanderwolf reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
The student protests have spread quickly through the Oromo region that surrounds the capital. Farmers and other citizens are joining the demonstrations. The government accuses some of the protesters of trying to destabilize the country. One resident, who wished to remain anonymous out of concern for his safety, says security forces deployed to the region are controlling many access points to stop more people from joining the movement.
Most of the protesters are farmers. They came from the rural village into the town. The defense forces already, some of them left to the local area, to the rural village. The police is also arresting some of those participants.
The Ethiopian government says it can confirm 5 deaths from clashes with security forces, while opposition groups say 60 people have been killed so far. Amnesty International said Wednesday the protests are being violently suppressed. Protests against the Addis Ababa Integrated Regional Development Plan also erupted in April 2014, resulting in mass arrests and several dozen deaths during clashes with security forces. The master plan is an expansion blueprint for the capital. Citizens in the surrounding Oromo Federal Regional State say they are concerned the proposed infrastructure will gobble up their land and endanger their cultural heritage. Oromos are the largest ethnic group in Ethiopia, making up about a third of the population. The government promised to hold inclusive consultations on the master plan after the 2014 protest. Opposition leader Merera Gudina of the Oromo People's Congress says those discussions were never held.
We tried several times. They refused. Then we tried to organize open public meetings. They refused. They blocked us. Then what you got is this. People are really fed up of this government, their life. Especially the young people are fed up of everything.
Merera calls for the scrapping of the master plan and transformation of the regional government. The government says the master plan has not been implemented yet, though opposition groups allege that farmers are already being evicted. Protests in Ethiopia are rare. The ruling party has been in power since 1991 and won all seats in parliament during the last national elections in May. But tensions are there, says Hallelujah Luli of the Institute of Security Studies.
I think what we're witnessing is an unprecedented level of protests. And I don't think the security forces and the government was prepared for such level of movement. And I believe, showed us the ill-preparedness of the state to handle such kind of demands.
Ethiopia is one of Africa's fastest-growing economies. Still, almost a third of its population lives below the poverty line, and millions of people are affected by an ongoing drought this year. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. After several delays, an advanced team of rebels loyal to Riek Machar are due to arrive in Juba this week. The Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, the body overseeing implementation of the August peace deal, says having the SPLM in opposition advance team in Juba will facilitate the formation of other institutions. Both warring parties have repeatedly violated the permanent ceasefire. JMEC acting spokesperson Ali Virji says the commission chairman and former Botswana president Festus Mogae mapped out plans to receive 150 SPLM-IO members this week, the first batch of the advance team. Their arrival to Juba was delayed in large part because the two sides could not agree on how many members should be part of that team. The SPLM-IO wanted well over 600. The government said it should be around 30. Virji says both sides are now ready to move forward. He says a total of 609 opposition officials will arrive in the country over the next 2 weeks. He says the SPLM-IO delegates will travel throughout the country to demonstrate that the peace deal is holding. USAID is working to help feed thousands of hungry South Sudanese. The aid agency this week pledged an additional $173 million to combat severe food shortages caused by the fighting that broke out 2 years ago. USAID's Deputy Assistant Administrator Bob Levitt says they expect 20% of the population in South Sudan to face severe life-threatening hunger this month alone. The new assistance will provide more than 85,000 tons of emergency food, including specialized nutrition products that treat acute malnutrition. The aid will serve 2.4 million South Sudanese facing severe life-threatening hunger, as well as refugees within South Sudan. The international agency says in a statement today that it will partner with the UN World Food Program to stock food ahead of the May to August rainy season when most roads become impassable, especially in hard-to-reach areas. And finally, South Sudan police say they are doing everything they can to ensure that residents and their property remain safe and secure during the holiday season. South Sudan's Inspector General of Police has outlined measures the police are carrying out in order to prevent crime during the festive season. General Pieng Deng Kwol told reporters at a news conference in Juba today that he will deploy more police officers in the capital and across the country during the next few weeks. Kwol did not specify how many additional police officers would be deployed in Juba or the rest of the country during the festive season. In recent weeks, some Juba residents say police failed to respond to emergency calls. They also say some officers with emergency response units sometimes demand money when ordered to respond to emergencies. Others charge that some police officers refuse to turn up when informed about an emergency situation in their community, such as a robbery in progress. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Public Enemy by Ross Corby.
Yes, last year in the King of Israel scene was I Joe Rastafari. Don't know any time righteousness and consciousness come forward. The people always want to kill it down scene. Bless the Most High. Original Rascal, the life and direct. So Sudan is liberated. Yeah. Watch it.
They call me a public enemy. Because I'm fighting my enemy. Public enemy. Because I'm fighting my enemy.
Say, I'm not a Lebanese, a Japanese, a Chinese. Your Southern Sudanese.
They call me a public enemy. Because I'm fighting my enemy. Public enemy. Because I'm fighting my enemy.
Say, anytime I want to talk about my people's rights,
they call me a warrior.
Anytime I want to talk about equal rights and justice,
they call me a criminal.
Don't forget about the facts and the press. Before you make your judgment,
don't forget about the past and the present. Before you make your judgment,
do you remember the days of slavery when our forefathers were taken across the Atlantic? It was a pity. Hey.
We've been listening to Ross Corby with the song Public Enemy. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. And you know it, yes, you know it. You know it, and you know it, yes, you know it. You know it, yeah, yeah, yeah. They call me a public.